app, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Charges are beginning to pile up against the man suspected of shooting two Minnesota state lawmakers and their spouses over the weekend. Vance Belter surrendered on his hands and knees last night after a nearly two-day manhunt. CBS's Anna Schechter.
He is going to face six federal charges, including two federal murder charges. So that could carry the death penalty if prosecutors seek it.
Iranian state media has announced a new barrage of missiles targeting Israel. CBS's Natalie Brand with more on the G7 summit in Canada.
Looming over the gathering, the conflict between Israel and Iran now in its fourth day.
It's painful for both parties, but I'd say Iran is not winning this war.
Wheeling, West Virginia Fire Chief Jim Blazer after flash flooding in the area.
If you have no reason to be in these areas, please avoid them. If you are going out just to see what the damage is, please stay away.
CBS News Brief. I'm Matt Piper.
This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. State Superintendent Dr. Jill Underley released a statement on Friday criticizing the level of school funding in the budget approved by the Republican-controlled Joint Committee on Finance. Dr. Underley said the budget motion fails the state's students, educators, and public schools, arguing that it raises property taxes, cuts youth mental health funding, and doesn't support students with disabilities. School funding has become a controversial topic in recent years as districts across the state turn to operational referendums to solve their budget issues. Devin Remiker was elected as the new chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin at the party's state convention over the weekend. Remiker formerly served as the state party's executive director and was endorsed by outgoing chair Ben Wickler. He defeated 3rd Congressional District Chair William Garcia and Joe Zepecki. In his victory speech, Remiker turned his sights towards the 2026 elections. He also said he plans to work with Democrats from across the state to stand up against the policies being implemented by the Trump administration. Pierce County Fair officials are reminding area residents that they have until Wednesday to register their exhibits. Registration for an exhibit at the fair will be open to residents of Pierce, St. Croix, Dunn, and Pepin counties. The fair will also feature a junior class of exhibits for members of the Pierce County youth organizations. Any resident interested in entering an animal into the fair must upload the proper paperwork ahead of time, and all lactating dairy cows must be tested for influenza A before arriving. More information can be found on the Pierce County website. The Embrace and Community Referral Agency has announced a move to a new location in Rice Lake. The organization's new office is on West John Street, and organization officials hope it will increase their visibility and ability to reach people. The agency offers support services for survivors of gender-based violence, including counseling, crisis intervention, and even emergency shelter and housing services. The facility will be open Monday through Thursday from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and residents can also access a 24/7 helpline. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
Another win for Priester. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball? The Brewers have the day off before heading to Chicago tomorrow night for a series against the Cubs. The crew with a 3-2 win over the Cardinals yesterday, thanks to 24-year-old Quinn Priester, the right-hander out of Cary, Illinois, who's now won 4 in a row. I asked him what went through his mind as he held St. Louis to just one run through 6 innings.
No excuses type of mentality. Even today, you know, don't get a strike, you know, don't get a call go your way. Like, who cares? Like, you can't change it. You know, complain about it's not going to help anybody. So just go out there, do the job, you know, it's asked to me, and try and exceed those expectations and help us win games.
Manager Pat Murphy.
Quinn was great. We've given him that opportunity, and he's riding it.
NBA Finals Game 5 tonight. The Thunder host the Pacers. The series tied at 2 games apiece. A blockbuster trade. The Grizzlies sending guard Desmond Bane to the Orlando Magic for 2 other players and 5 first-round draft picks. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Scattered showers and thunderstorms tonight, some severe this evening with large hail, damaging wind gusts, and even an isolated tornado. A low in the mid-60s. For tomorrow, partly sunny, a high near 80. Chance of afternoon and evening rain. Right now it's 80.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, your innocence is proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
State Representative Christian Phelps.
As somebody who's in my first term in the legislature, one of the striking things is how seldom the majority party speaks with us. I don't know how many of my colleagues personally feel LGBTQ people don't deserve freedom, but that's kind of irrelevant at the end of the day. They've already spent a number of days attacking trans people because those are days they don't have to spend defending their very unpopular economic agenda.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Pat Kreitlow, back from adventures in Canada, will be joining us to break down the news. Retired Major General Randy Manner will be here as well. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is 93.5 The Tap.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
It is this moment right now, and we need people that have wealth and access to step the hell up.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
We can't take this as a country to have a leader who is so ill-informed and we look terrible.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
You got a bad sandwich at your favorite deli. What do you do about it? We can talk about whatever you want to sound off on.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. I hope your Monday is starting off well. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a packed show for you all today to help make sense of this weekend's events. Much news, obviously, the politically motivated assassinations and attempted assassinations in Minnesota. Some targets, including Wisconsin elected officials. We're going to get to all of that. We've got two journalists from Minnesota that are going to join us this hour to, again, help us unpack all that has happened. Of course, nationwide, millions of Americans showing up for the No Kings protests. Meanwhile, back in Washington, D.C., a military parade that I think struck some as somewhat surprising, disorganized, and not the intended display of strength that President Trump hoped it to be. But at this hour, we have breaking news from the legal front for each and every one of you. A federal judge, a Reagan-appointed judge, William Young, has declared the Trump administration's cut to the National Institutes of Health grants over what Trump had termed DEI policies and gender ideology to be, quote, illegal and, quote, void. He's ordering the grants restored. The judge has yet to issue his written decision. Of course, we'll cover that when the judge does. But the language from the hearing this afternoon, where the judge indicated that he would find those Trump-ordered cuts, where he will be finding those Trump-ordered cuts to be illegal, his language in concluding that this afternoon was to many shocking. Though the outcome, I think, to others was not so surprising, the specificity, the rhetoric, and the directness of the judge's language, shocking to many. Frankly, I was a bit gobsmacked. I've never seen a federal court judge speak in this sort of a way about any presidential administration's policies since I have been on planet Earth. Let me share with you some of that fairly shocking language. I'm just going to read it so that we all can absorb it together. This is again from Judge Reagan-appointed Federal Article III Judge William Young in Massachusetts in concluding that Donald Trump's cuts based on, quote, DEI and gender ideology to the NIH were illegal. Judge Young said this afternoon, quote, I am hesitant to draw this conclusion, but I have an unflinching obligation to draw it, that this represents racial discrimination and discrimination against America's LGBTQ community. That's what this is. I would be blind not to call it out. My duty is to call it out. He said in another bit of the hearing, quote, it is palpably clear that these directives and the set of terminated grants here are also designed to frustrate, to stop research that may bear on the health. We're talking about health here, the health of Americans, of our LGBTQ community. That's appalling. I've never seen a record where discrimination was so palpable, where racial discrimination was so clear. I've sat on this bench now for 40 years. I've never seen governmental racial discrimination like this. I'm asking myself, how can this be? He went on, I have the protection that the founders wrote into the Constitution, along with imposing upon me a duty to speak the truth in every case. I try to do that. What if I didn't have those protections? What if my job was on the line, my profession? Would I have stood up against all this? Would I have said, you can't do this? You are bearing down on people of color because of their color. The Constitution will not permit that. Perhaps in vague reference to both Donald Trump's attacks against specific lawyers, specific law firms, and of course, Judge Dugan, as well as Congresswoman McIver, the takedown and handcuffing last week of Senator Padilla of California. The judge also said, have we fallen so low? Have we no shame? Absolutely shocking language coming from a Reagan-appointed Article III federal appeals court judge this afternoon, finding Donald Trump's cuts to NIH grants illegal, unconstitutional, and the quote, I've never seen government racial discrimination like this. Absolutely shocking. I've got Matt Rothschild, host of the Wisconsin Forward podcast here on the Civic Media Radio Network with me to make sense of all this news this afternoon. Welcome, Matt. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, Maggie. My pleasure. I hope you had a nice weekend. Yeah, crazy amount of news. Look, we rarely see this kind of frank language from a judge, especially before he or she has written the opinion out. But it was quite clear, and I think refreshingly clear, that this judge stepped up to the plate and just took a big swing at the horrible discriminatory policies that we've had here from the Trump administration. He said he's been on the bench for 40 years. As you pointed out, he was appointed by Reagan. This is hardly, you know, a left-leaning judge. And he just let Trump have it. And, you know, one of the things that caught me, especially on this rhetoric of his, on this ruling of his, was just the parentheses where he says, we're talking about health here. I mean, yes. That just showed me, you know, the health of Americans, he said, of our LGBTQ community. The idea that Trump would discriminate against people on the delivery of their health care and on their health care needs, even though it was a parenthesis, it just struck me as really important.
Yeah, a literal matter of life and death, and saying there's discrimination, and then there's discrimination that's intended to deprive you of your health and welfare. It was sort of the shock that the judge was expressing.
We have no shame, which is an echo of the McCarthyism.
Right. Which, period. Of course, I've quoted, you've quoted, everybody's quoted in this moment. When I started reading the accounts that came out, I've never heard a judge speak this way about any presidential administration's policies, ever. Least of which coming from a Republican about a sitting Republican president's policies. This definitely stands alone. And yet all of our news this afternoon that we will be talking about is to a degree of a whole. It is the response, the responsibility to respond, to resist, if you will, some of the Trump administration's most, by this Republican-appointed judge's terms, racist, most oppressive policies. Certainly, not just policies, but the rhetoric of Donald Trump seems to be incredibly important in this moment. We will review some of the things that Donald Trump has said over the years. Brian Klass at The Atlantic doing yeoman's work in the last couple of days, trying to remind us of the language that Trump has used, calling so many on the left human scum, targeting judges, even if you will recall, invoking a firing squad to describe what Lynn Cheney deserved. All of this pretext, prequel, and indeed the framework, which many are alleging today, caused, activated, helped make more extreme the individual that is now charged, both federally, federal charges and state charges expected against the gunman who shot and killed two, including the former speaker of the Minnesota legislature and her husband in what many have called a targeted political assassination. Just to refresh our recollections, here is what occurred. Around 2 a.m. on June 14th, there was a 911 call. Police responded to current sitting Minnesota State Senator John Hoffman and his wife's residence, Yvette. They had been shot. Based upon other information that the officers had, they proactively then went to check on the home of Representative Hortman. They encountered a suspect dressed as a police officer, also with a fake mocked-up police vehicle. The suspect opened fire on the police and fled. Again, they found both Representative Hortman and her husband shot and murdered. Around 6 a.m., the suspect returned to the home where he rented a room part-time. He texted roommates that he had made bad choices. Around 9:45 a.m., again, this is on Saturday, Governor Walz announced at a press conference that, again, Representative Hortman and her husband had died after being shot. Over the course of Saturday, then, the suspect was named, a statewide manhunt. This went on, and by 9:30 p.m. yesterday, the suspect had been arrested. We're going to get into some of the facts that transpired, Matt, especially the reactions to inaccurate reporting, inaccurate contextualizing by Elon Musk on X and others that this man was a Democrat. By all accounts, including accounts from his roommate or guy that he shared this home with, who claimed to be his best friend since the fourth grade, this man was a Donald Trump supporter and a rabid pro-lifer, and that accounts to the contrary were simply incorrect. Mr. Belter appeared in federal court today. He is being charged again under federal and state law. These are the facts as we know them at this moment. We're very happy to be joined by Matthew Blake, a reporter from the Minneapolis Post. Welcome to the show, Matthew. Thank you for your patience as we had to cover some of the other breaking news of the afternoon. Appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Matt, can you correct any of the facts or fill in some of the details that I may have gotten wrong or missed that are important for people to understand what occurred here in broad strokes? We've got about a minute, and then we'll come back on the other side.
Sure. So just very broadly, Saturday morning, Governor Tim Walz, the Democratic governor of Minnesota, he announced that Melissa Hortman is the Speaker of the House for our state government here, and her husband were fatally shot, and that another lawmaker, John Hoffman, and his spouse were also shot, but that they survived the shooting. And so Governor Tim Walz had another press conference last night at 10:30 p.m. saying that Vance Bolter, the suspect in the shooting, had been apprehended in Green Isle, which is a pretty rural part of the state of Minnesota. And then, as you said, Maggie, today he was officially charged. And we've learned that he had also stopped at the homes of a couple of other lawmakers, but had not gone into their homes. So those are the bare facts of the case right now.
Thanks so much again, folks. We are joined this half hour by Matthew Blake, a reporter with the Minneapolis Post. When we return on the other side, we're going to discuss the legacy of Speaker Melissa Hortman, how these elected officials were known and understood within Minnesota politics, who they were as people, and additional information that has been developing over the course of the afternoon about the shooter, Vance Bolter. Political assassination has no place in a democracy. We express our politics peacefully through protest and speech, never through violence. Let's remember that as we move forward. We're going to come back with Mr. Matthew Blake, again of the Minneapolis Post, and of course my great co-host this half hour and full show.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill backed by Donald Trump that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Ken, as I like to call him, my least favorite Martin, chairman of the Democratic National Committee.
The other night I said to myself for the first time, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Matt Flynn.
You go into combat and the general goes, I'm afraid. He reminds me of the coach of the Jets back in the 90s. The other team would come on the field and say, boy, they look big. No, I swear to God. And the Jets lost 12 games. I mean, right. You can't have this kind of stuff. Get this guy out of here. Put in Ben Wickler.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station. And on the app.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Everybody, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're diving deep on the political assassinations that occurred over the weekend, including some of the reactions of politicians from across the country, helping to understand the reactions very close to home in Minnesota is reporter Matthew Blake of MinPost.com. I misidentified Mr. Blake previously. My apologies to you, Matthew. MinPost.com, an independent nonprofit newsroom. You can find all of Matthew's great work at MinPost.com. Again, that's MinPost.com. Matthew, who was Speaker Hortman to Minnesotans? How did the average Minnesotan know and understand Speaker Hortman?
Sure. So Melissa Hortman, who lived in Brooklyn Park and lived in that area for most of her life, except for college, she was the Speaker of the House of Minnesota from 2019 to 2025. And then this year, something very unusual happened where there were an equal number of Democrats and Republicans in the state house. And so Melissa Hortman became basically co-Speaker of the House this year with her Republican counterpart, Lisa Damus. So some of the things that Melissa Horton is known for is that she spearheaded a ton of liberal policy legislation along with Governor Tim Walz and a Democratic-controlled Senate. This includes expanding health care. This includes drastically increasing the amount of money that the state of Minnesota spends on each child in public school, providing free school breakfast and lunch for children, easing access to abortions, putting in gun control laws. The list just goes on. She was able to very effectively introduce a whole bunch of policies, particularly a couple of years ago. And then prior to that, she had served as the chair for basically the House Energy Committee here in Minnesota. And she was kind of the first Minnesotan to come up with constructive legislation in terms of clean energy, solar energy, requiring utilities to explore alternative energy. So her legacy here is in large part all the legislation that she was able to shepherd through as someone that everyone saw as like fiercely intelligent and also a very skilled and realistic negotiator.
Yeah, Matthew, I wanted to follow up on that. You know, what were the qualities that made her such a an excellent legislator? How was she able to get all those things across the finish line, which we're jealous about over here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, I think one thing is that the district that she represented, you know, Brooklyn Park, it's not like, you know, a hotbed of like left liberalism. And she actually had lost the first couple of times that she ran for state office. She won on the third time. And, you know, so she always had a Republican challenger in her district until she became, you know, kind of well established by the late aughts. So she was always having as an elected official to speak with Republicans, to reach out with them. And she was able to make a lot of compromises. And frankly, some of those compromises progressives really hated. A week before she died, she helped shepherd a new state budget here in Minnesota, and that included reducing state-funded health care for adult undocumented immigrants. And progressives were, as you can understand, very unhappy about that, but she saw that as necessary. And so I came to see her as someone who had very clear liberal ideals, but was also a very pragmatic legislator.
A very pragmatic legislator. I've heard in other coverage, Matthew, again, about her willingness to compromise, her willingness to collaborate with conservatives to get things done. Matthew, what has been the reaction of her fellow elected officials, especially in state government? And I'm particularly interested in the reactions of elected officials from the GOP side in the state of Minnesota, because candidly speaking, some of the reactions from some Wisconsin conservatives have been downright appalling.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Obviously, as you kicked off the segment with saying, there has been a lot of disinformation and a lot of kind of, you know, conspiracy theories or kind of false rumors relating to this. What I can say is that in Minnesota, and Minnesota, for better or worse, is known as kind of being Minnesota nice, where everyone is very polite and cordial. But that definitely does extend to the political arena. During these budget negotiations that I reported on the last couple of months, it was an extremely difficult process, and there was a lot of acrimony between both sides. But at the same time, there was this level of respectfulness. I would go to press conferences with Melissa Horton and also her co-speaker of the House, Lisa Damith, a Republican. And I spoke with Lisa Damith earlier today, and you know, she was just saying that she was beyond devastated about this, that she saw Horton as a role model for her, as a female elected official that kind of climbed up the legislative ranks. And other Republicans that I've spoke with the last few days, you know, they're publicly saying, and there's nothing that I can discern that they're saying anything different privately. They're publicly saying that this is awful and they're afraid for their lives, that if someone can do this to one state lawmaker, who's to say that another person couldn't do that to them?
Folks, that is Matthew Blake, a reporter with MinnPost.com, an independent nonprofit newsroom. Matt, what would you like people in Wisconsin to understand about the political climate today, Monday, at 4:30 p.m. or nearly 4:30 p.m. this afternoon in Minnesota?
Sure. I am actually from Wisconsin. I grew up there, and I can say that the political climate here is just shock and grief and devastation. Will this turn into a partisan issue at some point? Will elements of it, you know, turn into a debate about gun control or abortion? Maybe. But for now, it's just kind of everyone is stunned and grieving.
Folks, again, that's Matthew Blake of MinnPost.com. We continue on the other side with Matt Rothschild and I, Maggie Dawn, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Our discussion with Minnesota-based reporters.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on Air.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. Some state lawmakers are expressing concerns about proposed legislation to include a plain language explanation for ballot referendums. The legislation specifies that the explanation would be written by the nonpartisan Legislative Reference Bureau, but could be revised by lawmakers afterwards. Critics of the proposal say the legislative majority could have too much control over the process. They also argue the language of the legislation fails to define what exactly plain language means and that it lacks an enforcement mechanism to ensure fairness. The Wisconsin Election Commission is mailing postcards to over 200,000 registered voters in the state, advising them to confirm their eligibility. The commission is advising anyone who receives one of the postcards with official voter registration notice on it that they have until July 15th to respond. The postcards are being sent to people who have not voted over the past 4 years and ask the recipients if they want to remain a registered voter at their listed address. If recipients don't respond, their voter registration will be deactivated on July 31st. Two men have been charged in relation to an armed burglary investigation involving a 12-year-old in Cumberland earlier this month. According to court documents, 19-year-old Logan Draper of Watertown and 18-year-old Christopher Glazer of Oconomowoc were each charged with felony armed burglary, theft of movable property, and intentionally contributing to delinquency. The pair, along with the victim's 12-year-old daughter, are accused of breaking into the home and stealing a safe containing two firearms and about $30,000 worth of cash and coins. Eau Claire area residents took to the downtown streets on Saturday for the local No Kings March. The event saw hundreds of marches across the country in protest of actions taken by the Trump administration. Chippewa Valley Indivisible organized the Eau Claire March and estimated well over 2,000 people were in attendance. They also said they worked closely with local law enforcement authorities to ensure no conflicts arose and protesters remained safe during the event. Thousands of residents participated in No Kings marches across the state. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Ted Lasso star Jason Sudeikis learned a lot from his uncle, George Wendt. On a recent episode of the Where Everybody Knows Your Name podcast, actor, writer, producer Brett Goldstein, who plays Roy Kent on Ted Lasso, told Ted Danson that Sudeikis found out about his uncle's death while in the writer's room at Ted Lasso, then added that they matched tears with laughter by watching compilations of George Wendt as Norm. Orlando Bloom is alive and well after his surgery. No reason to panic, Bloom fans. The actor had elective surgery, which was a blood filtering procedure to remove microplastics or forever chemicals from his blood. The procedure is only available at one clinic in London, according to Collider. If you're thinking about checking out this procedure, just know that it costs 10 grand. Let's be honest, most of us will just have to cross our fingers and hope that having Tupperware in our blood isn't as bad as experts say. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Scattered showers and thunderstorms tonight, some severe this evening with large hail, damaging wind gusts, and even an isolated tornado. A low in the mid-60s. For tomorrow, partly sunny, a high near 80. Chance of afternoon and evening rain.
Right now it's 80.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
The soap scientists have found a way to incorporate Sydney Sweeney's actual bathwater into the soap. What if she doesn't smell good? I know she's beautiful.
It smells terrible.
What if she stinks? And no one is going to tell her that because she's Sydney Sweeney. Here's an open invitation to Sydney Sweeney. Come by the Nightlight Studios. I'll smell you and let you know if this is a good product.
Maybe drop off,
and give us a few bucks. Yeah.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome nutritionist and dietitian from Weightless MD, Sherry Stoka. Then Phil Krause, owner of the Time Community Theater in Oshkosh, joins the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. Welcome. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, an absolutely mind-blowing weekend of news. Our big thanks to reporter Matthew Blake of MinPost.com, an independent nonprofit newsroom, for joining us. You can find Matthew Blake's great work on the Minnesota budget at MinPost.com. We'll be sure to have him back. We're now joined for the next half hour by another great commentator and news reporter from Minnesota. Her name is Jordana Green. She is co-host of the Adam and Jordana Show on WCC. AM Radio. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Jordana.
Thank you so much for having me, Maggie.
Let's just jump right in here. I wanted to share, I've got my co-host for the afternoon, Matt Rothschild, with me, Jordana. There has been some absolutely stomach-churning reactions from some Wisconsin politicians to the tragedies in Minnesota this weekend. Congressman Derek Van Orten said this on X over the weekend: a whole pack of election deniers got together and spewed hate. One decided to murder and attempt to murder some politicians that weren't far left enough for them. In subsequent posts, he called Minnesota Governor Walz stupid and a clown. Former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, before the facts were understood about this political assassin, Mr. Belter, went on X after calling the shooting horrific this weekend. He said this: if this ends up being done by an ultra-liberal activist upset by the lawmakers' votes to end taxpayer-funded health care for illegals, watch for many on the left to be silent or even justify it. Wrong. That post then, mysteriously disappeared as the facts about the killer became clear over the weekend. Jordana, I just wanted to jump in, and I'm going to ask you, I'm going to start with the same question I ended our interview of your colleague, Matthew Blake. Have any Republicans in Minnesota adopted or come out publicly and said what I'm going to call some truly offensive, tone-deaf, and gross things in the wake of what is, I think, a political tragedy for us all, regardless of politics?
Maggie, Matt, they have not. I'm not sure what's going on in Wisconsin politics, but no, this was an absolute tragedy for people on both sides of the aisle. It should be an absolute tragedy for people on both sides of the aisle, no matter where they sit, where they live. What happened here was an assassination that seems to have been, the motive is not out, it's not definitive yet, but seems to have been politically motivated. And for anybody to react in a way that is not just sadness and disgust and disappointment and hurt and anger is honestly the wrong reaction. That I'm so sorry to hear that some of your lawmakers have politicized this and made it even worse. And that makes me nauseous. That just makes me sick.
I was pretty grossed out, too, to tell you the truth, Jordana. Awesome. I just think Wisconsinites all Americans deserve better from their elected officials in moments of such acute tragedy. I'm struggling to place this in context of all of the rest of what has been going on. And we're doing that today with our callers. And folks, if you have a question, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I know that the governor called and the No Kings protest organizers heeded the governor's call to cancel No Kings protests across Minnesota on Saturday. Lots of people showed up anywhere. Can you speak to what the protests felt like, if you're aware? How is the community handling this? Is there indications, unlike apparently in Wisconsin and some of our politicians on the right, are there indications of people trying to use this as a unifying moment to actually stand up against political violence? If you can address both that bigger question and, hey, how did the folks that showed up for the canceled No Kings protest, how did those go over the weekend?
Well, you're right. The governor did warn folks not to go to the protest, the No Kings rally, and many did not heed his call. We had local protests outside of the Capitol all over Minnesota that maybe people felt it was a little safer. Also, maybe some people didn't understand or know what was happening in the news. They just got up and went to the protest, and they weren't paying attention. But I will say it went off with no incidents. And I'm very grateful for that. And while I was not at the No Kings protest here at the Capitol, you know, it's my understanding that it went off with its intended purpose. I don't necessarily think the tone of the protest changed. People wanted to get out there. When the word started spreading, of course, there was a more somber note and people were devastated and shocked and also scared, because remember, this person was not apprehended. Vance Belcher was not apprehended until late last night. So this all happened while he was on the loose and there was a spotting of him in Minneapolis, which, of course, is just across the river from St. Paul, you know, later in the day. So that protest did go off without a hitch. I'm sure it was much more somber as the news spread of the murders of Melissa Hortman and her husband, Mark, and then, of course, the shootings of the Hoffmans. Yes. But it didn't necessarily change the tone, but the tone in Minnesota, we have not heard what you have heard. We are probably so shocked here because everybody knew Melissa Hortman. She was the most recent Speaker of the House before somebody else took over in, you know, early 2025. And she was somebody who worked across the aisle. She was somebody who passed common sense, no nonsense legislation. She had been a public servant for many, many years, an educated, smart member of the community, a lifelong Minnesotan. So there wasn't that kind of vitriol, which probably led us to this point, by the way. It's that kind of negative, divisive derision, negative verbiage that has brought us to this point where people act on those horrific words, on those insightful words when we go after each other in such a negative way. So we did not feel the divisiveness today. And there are on my show this morning, on CCO and on so many people's shows and all over TV, people are just in shock and they just want to come together and grieve and, you know, just take this all in and take stock of, wow, how did we get here? And we really, it's time to make a change.
So true. Jordana, how well did you know the speaker? Did you interview her on your show? What was she like in person?
Yes, she has been on our show. I did not know her personally. I only knew her as a lawmaker. I did not know her personally. I will say this about her, and I feel like everybody knew this about Melissa Hortman, but she spent a lot of her time training service dogs. This is in her free time. That was one of, I guess, a hobby, something that she did. But this is the kind of person, you know, that we're dealing with. This is a person who volunteered to train service dogs for veterans through an organization called Helping Paws. And I don't mean to elevate her in death to, you know, the place of a saint. I think sometimes we jump where we never want to speak ill of the dead, or we never want to say it how it really is. And certainly a day after or 2 days after their murder is not the time. But Melissa Hortman really was remembered today by friends and colleagues and those of us who had interactions with her for her kindness. She had deep concern for people living in her district and all Minnesotans. She was always trying to, you know, the legislation that she proposed and that she was heavily involved in were things like free school breakfasts and lunches, you know, early investment in childhood education, health care, which may have been one of the reasons for this. We know the person had anti-abortion and some abortion clinics were on the list as targets on his kill list. She led efforts to pass comprehensive reproductive health care protections. You know, she championed secured paid family leave and medical leave program here in Minnesota. She was a stalwart environmentalist. She also promoted gun safety and criminal justice reform, advocated for gun violence prevention and measures like universal background checks and red flag laws. You know, this is a person who, you know, when we say DFL or progressive, she wasn't one that was so far left that nobody could stand anymore. And we all know who those politicians are. This is somebody who listened to Minnesota. You know, we do. This is somebody who listened to Minnesotans and heard them and worked across the aisle to create laws that benefited actual Minnesotans.
Jordana, folks, if you're just joining us, just to let you know who we're talking to, our colleague Jordana Green, co-host of the Adam and Jordana Show at WCCO-AM Radio in Minneapolis. Jordana, I wanted to ask you this question. And it's a loaded one, admittedly. As a woman, I've worked nearly 15 years in government service. I was the chief legal officer of Milwaukee County. I've got my share of death threats. I'm sure you have too, as a woman in media. Mm-hmm. Here was a woman who is smart, clear, outspoken, and worked to build collaborative consensus across the aisle and effectively did so. She was a political leader. I'm as a woman, I always worry about, not always worry about, it's the wrong thing. I have to tune out any of the additional risk that may accrue to me because I happen to be a female doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Any moments where you reflected upon that in the last, you know, 24 to 36 hours, do you think she was in part targeted because she was the speaker and or because she was a woman, or was it purely just her politics? What are your personal feelings about that? And then, of course, anything that you're hearing concretely about that?
Interesting question. And I think any woman in a position of power is oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes more at risk. And, you know, looking at the hit list of the people he had on the list in the car. I mean, there were over 40 Minnesota elected officials. They were primarily Democrats. Okay, but we do have a lot of female Democrats in this state. You know, U.S. Senator Tina Smith, Representative Ilhan Omar were on the list, but also on the list was Governor Tim Walz. You know, these people were primarily Democrats. So I'm not ready to go out on a limb and say this person was a male chauvinist. Or, you know, I'm not ready to go there. I think he was a very sick person, a very troubled person, a very angry person. I don't know that being a woman helps when you have a woman in power and somebody differs with their political opinions. But I don't know that I'm going to make that leap that it was a female driven crime. Because remember, he went to the Hoffman. He went to Senator Hoffman's house first, and he is a man, and that was the first target that he hit. He went to another lawmaker in Maple Grove. Nobody was there. He went to, and we don't know who that person is. He went to another lawmaker, in another state senator in New Hope, and that state senator was a woman. She did not answer the door. That person was a bit intercepted and left, Van Stelter, and then he went to Melissa Hortman's house, and you know, alleged. This is all alleged.
Yes.
I didn't say all of that.
Of course, alleged. Folks, we've got Jordana Green with us of WCCO, co-host of the
Adam and Jordana show. She's going to come back with us on the other side. I'll just say this very generally. There are more female Democrats elected than there are Republicans. Fact. Mm-hmm. We're going to come back. My name's Maggie Dawn. I got Matt Rothschild as a co-host with me. Stay with us. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. May 12th, the U.S. Department of Justice reportedly requested all the state of Colorado's records relating to the 2024 federal election and the preservation of records related to the 2020 election. The request may relate to President Trump's effort to free a convicted Colorado election official. The records request is massive. In November 2024, there were 4.65 million registered Colorado voters, 3.3 million of whom cast ballots in the presidential election. Then consider the records from every electronic ballot tabulator, voter registration and verification documents for each voter, and more. Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold told NPR, "What they're going to do with all this data, I don't know, but I'm sure they'll use it to push their ridiculous disinformation and lies to the American public," she said. There is speculation that it may be related to convicted Mesa County elections official Tina Peters, sentenced to 9 years for giving voting machine access to conspiracy theorists tied to MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. The week before the Colorado records request, DOJ was directed by President Trump to, quote, take all necessary action to help secure the release of Peters. To date, Colorado has reportedly provided two copies of its master voter list to DOJ and its 2024 voter history file. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Ken, as I like to call him, my least favorite Martin.
Chairman of the Democratic National Committee.
The other night I said to myself for the first time, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Matt Flynn.
You go into combat and the general goes, I'm afraid. He reminds me of the coach of the Jets back in the 90s. The other team would come on the field and say, boy, they look big. No, I swear to God. And the Jets lost 12 games. I mean, right? You can't have this kind of stuff. Get this guy out of here. Put in Ben Wickler.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network, where we're all about real news and great discussion, even when it's difficult, especially when it's difficult. I'm joined this afternoon, as I am every Monday, by my fantastic co-host, Matt Rothschild. He also hosts the podcast Wisconsin Forward that you can find wherever you find your pods and also, of course, at civicmedia.us. Matt and I are very pleased to be joined this half hour by Jordana Green. She is the co-host of the Adam and Jordana Show on WCCO AM Radio based out of Minneapolis. We're talking, of course, about the targeted political assassination of the current co-speaker of the Minnesota legislature, former standalone speaker Melissa Hortman, as well as the attempted killings of a number of other elected officials. Jordana, Let's just, again, level set for people. The reactions to date in Minnesota are not as divided as we may be seeing here in Wisconsin. There is generally an immense sense of shock and grief, as you have described it. What do you think comes next in Minnesota politics?
It's such a good question. What I think comes next in Minnesota politics, and I think in Minnesota and hopefully other states, is we spent 3 hours on my show this morning, you know, talking about this, and everyone agreed, and we rarely agree on anything, but everyone agreed that we must tone down the anger and the vitriol that leads to these kind of attacks, that everybody needs to take a breath. They need to chill the bleep out. And even if you disagree with someone politically, gun violence, any kind of violence against that person is never the answer. And we all agreed that we too are the problem. Because when you have a problem like this, you have to look in the mirror and say, how did it get this bad? And I always say on my show that our culture is set by what we're willing to tolerate. Well, not only have we tolerated gun violence in this country, but we have also highly tolerated nastiness and meanness. And you started our interview today with reactions that were mean. It didn't say, I'm so sorry about the death of the former Speaker of the House in Minnesota. I'm so sorry that Senator John Hoffman and his wife were attempted murder in their home. It started with, maybe if they didn't do this policy or that policy, almost like the victims deserved it. And who are we in this country if that is the first reaction that you think of when you hear that somebody has been murdered? Do we want to be those people? I know people who called into my show all morning. We don't. And even if we are, we should look in the mirror and say, let's not do this anymore. I hope that's where it goes. I don't have a crystal ball, Maggie, but I hope that's where we go. We've learned a horrible, horrible lesson in Minnesota today.
Folks, that's Jordana Green, co-host of the Adam and Jordana Show at WCCO AM Radio.
Yeah, Jordana, thanks for that comment about the need for just basic common decency. And it was shocking that it wasn't evidenced by Scott Walker or Van Orden or Mike Lee of Utah, God forbid. I wanted to, you had mentioned Governor Walz, who you identified also as a target. I wonder how you believe he has handled this.
Well, in reaction, he has handled it the way any CEO of a state, meaning the governor, should. He has handled it with compassion, kindness toward the family, empathy towards everybody, with all of the resources that could have been mustered to find this lunatic, which they found. Well, the alleged killer they found, and he is now in custody and his federal charges against him, which were at 1:30 today, also state charges against him. So the governor has acted as he was supposed to and appropriately. And he has, no matter what side of the aisle, I believe, been a source of comfort for people in Minnesota. Yet, you talk about the vitriol. You know, the governor was quoted as saying, you know, bad things about our president, likening him to, the Gestapo, the ICE informants, likening him to the Gestapo. So we hear on my show, well, Governor Walz is part of the problem. It's his vitriol that's part of the problem. And friends, yes, that is part of the problem, but it's part of the problem on both sides of the aisle. So while Governor Walz has handled the fallout of the murders and the attempted murders that we've seen over the weekend, he is not innocent in ratcheting up the rhetoric.
Let me ask you this question, Jordana, because I respect your view and you know Minnesota better than I do. I respectfully disagree. I do not think that the rhetoric of Democrats in response to what is pages and pages and pages and pages and pages of Donald Trump and similar MAGA regime folks using explicit language of violence and responding to what are, by I think historical objective measures, authoritarian-like tactics and labeling them accurately, can that really be analogized to Donald Trump saying Liz Cheney needs to be put up before a firing squad? Your reaction?
No, it cannot. It is not the same. And we do have to call out those differences. It is not the same. My point in saying that is that none of us are innocent, maybe you and me, but none of the politicians are innocent in ratcheting up the negative rhetoric. So, like, I wouldn't say it's just because of this side or whatever color, you're red or blue, it's just because of this side that this has happened. We have all, including the citizenry, the electorate, we have all played a role in making politics violent because also we are willing to tolerate it. So this, it's because I don't want to blame one side or the other, because I feel we are all complicit in what has led up to what happened over the weekend, in inciting this person, in radicalizing him to actually take action against political enemies.
Folks, that's Jordana Green of the Adam and Jordana Show on WCCO AM Radio out of Minneapolis. Jordana, thank you. We're going to pick up that question. Is there more responsibility on one side or the other? Where does this moment stand in historical context? We've got just the expert to help us unpack it. We got Matt sticking around. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The alleged killer of a Minnesota lawmaker and her husband could face the death penalty. 57-year-old Vance Belter faces 6 federal charges, says acting U.S. Attorney for the District of Minnesota, Joe Thompson.
Will we see the death penalty? It's too early to tell. That is one of the options for several of the charges, though.
Belter was taken into custody late last night. Violence against those in politics is at an all-time high. Our Scott McFarland with numbers involving those who work at the U.S. Capitol.
A CBS News review of U.S. Capitol police records shows a 300% increase, 300% in threat investigations from 2018 to 2024.
A federal judge in Boston says the Trump administration's cuts of NIH grants based on DEI initiatives are illegal. CBS's Stacey Lynn.